Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Starting the show today by talking with a couple of guests about wine and the wine industry. Leah Jones is one of our guests. She's the Executive Director of Diversity in Wine and Spirits. She's a diversity and inclusion specialist and also a sommelier. And Leah Jones, welcome. Thanks for being with us today.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Thanks for joining in. Also joining us is Jim Lagren. He is a certified wine educator and the author of a couple of books on wine. And Jim, welcome.
Larry, hi. How are you today? Thanks so much.
Well, thanks a lot for joining us. I'm just fine. We're going to be talking with Leah and Jim about their journey into the world of wine. We'll talk about diversity in the wine world and why there's not enough of it. And we are hoping to get a few recommendations about wine from both of them as well. So questions that you might have about wine, I hope you'll join in. Maybe you're wondering what it takes to make a career out of wine, wondering what and how to choose the kind of wine for you. You can give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Well, let's first hear a little bit from both of you about your background and how you got into this. Maybe, Jim, let's start with you.
All right, Larry, thank you. Well, I've been involved in the wine world for 20-some years. I was one of those people who, even as a young college student, really preferred wine to beer. And at some point, it sunk its claws into me, as I think most enophiles will agree that it does. And so I have been in the wine industry. I've been an importer and distributor, and I've done a lot of consulting. And in the last number of years, I've really turned my attentions to writing, because I think that the wine industry has kind of gone off the rails a little bit. It's become much too elitist. It really is not the just wonderful beverage that wine is intended to be. And so in my writings and in my classes and my educational efforts, I really try to just bring wine back down to earth and show everyone what a joy it can be and how wonderful it is to both enjoy and to share it with other people.
Well, I really appreciate you being with us today and your story. And Leah, tell us about yourself and your relationship to wine.
Well, actually, my journey hasn't been that long. I probably started my wine journey about 7 years ago. I've been in the restaurant industry and hospitality for over 20 years, actually. And I worked on the floor, in the kitchen. I had my own catering business. And I ended up working in a restaurant in 2013. And, you know, as a Black female, to have a job in New York City at a restaurant that I was working at as a captain was something that was, you know, you didn't see very often. And, you know, just I got the job based on my, you know, experience and education. Had nothing to do with what I looked like. But I realized I had an unfortunate moment with a colleague of mine who embarrassed me, you know, in the restaurant. She basically challenged my knowledge in wine. And from then on, you know, I think I was destroyed just because I'm like, Jesus, I've done everything. I have a restaurant management degree, culinary arts and, you know, just working on the floor, doing every job, busing and waitressing and just everything. And the one thing that I didn't know this person basically embarrassed me, and I said, never again. And so after that, that was it. I went through certifications with the Court of Master Sommeliers and WSET, Wine and Spirit Education Trust, Sommelier Society of America, and some other places as well. I became addicted. One day I was taking a class and somebody was saying, I smell New York City streets. And I'm like, oh my God, I do too. Like, it all snapped one day. And from then on, I just became so passionate and, just to increase my vocabulary or what I think wine smells like, I started traveling. So I can add New York City streets, and I can also add, Mafia Coast Beach, sand to my repertoire of things that I use to describe wine. But
that's great.
That's basically the wine journey for me.
Jim, is that
the descriptor?
Yeah, I was going to say, did you know that descriptor, New York City streets?
I'm stealing it, though. I love it. I'm stealing it.
Oh, my goodness me. Well, by the way, Leah, you also now you lead an organization called Diversity in Wine and Spirits. Talk about that and what's your mission and why that's important.
It's another unfortunate circumstance why I started the organization. so I'm telling you the story, and I'm telling you this colleague of mine embarrassed me and just, made me feel like I like Jon Snow. I know nothing, if you guys are Game of Thrones fans. So after that, along with that experience, and now my certification, I went back to the job scene and I tried to get a job as a sommelier. I applied to 76 jobs, job posts, and that's within like a 3-4 month, probably 4 or 5 month period of time. And nobody would hire me. I think I was floored, and then you would get the job interviews and you show up and I would get looks like, wait, you're Leah Jones? I'm like, yeah, I'm Leah Jones. Is there something on my face? Like what's going on? So that was just traumatizing. And it was just sommelier jobs, anything that had to do with wine, even at wine shops. I couldn't get hired, and I ended up moving to LA, and the same thing happened. I couldn't get hired for anything that had to deal with wine. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? I changed my hairstyles, different outfits, dyed my hair. Like, what is it?
Oh, man.
And so I'm like, okay, it's because I'm black. Like, I had to, at some point, you have to accept it has something to do with how you look. And it's one of those things that you can't prove, but you just know it. That's what it is. And I'm like, this sucks. Are there any programs out here? Like, are there any mentors that I can kind of go to? Maybe that's been in my position. There's not a lot of black people in the industry. That was difficult as well. It was just a difficult journey. And I said, I want to do, I want to have a scholarship program for black women. And then I looked around. I did get hired at a restaurant. The first restaurant I was hired at in L.A. was Tao. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Tao, but basically everybody that was working there was diverse. And from, different places, Hawaii, the Philippines, it's all over. And I'm just like, wow, other people must have it rough just like I do, maybe even worse. And I started doing research and I was trying to find, which someone did tell me a name recently, but I was like, man, like, are there any Asian winemakers in the U.S.? I now know one, but then I thought about just who was diverse. Yannick Benjamin is someone in the wine community who has just been crushing it. He's in a wheelchair. He started a nonprofit called Wine on Wheels. And I was just looking at other people's journeys, and I'm like, Jesus, I'm not the only one. I should start an organization that really speaks out to all spectrums of diversity. And then I started studying diversity and inclusion, and understanding diversity is just not, you know, I think in the U.S. we really focus on white and black and female, male. But in actuality, diversity is a whole spectrum. And I really wanted to make a difference. My colleague, who is the director of operations for Diversity Wine and Spirits, he said that the scholarship wouldn't be enough, that I can do something else. I can be bigger. So, you know, he planted this seed in my mind. And there you have it, Diversity in Wine and Spirits. So we advocate for all sections of diversity. We look for the most diverse people in the industry and try to, you know, highlight their initiatives. We're starting to offer grants and scholarships and intern/externships to marginalized people in the community.
Jim, do you have any observations on this? Why do you think the industry tends to lack diversity, and what are some of the problems as you see them?
Well, the industry certainly lacks diversity. I mean, anyone in the industry knows that the world of fine wine is absolutely dominated by white culture. I mean, it's about white people and white money and white connections. I've been attending wine industry events, as I mentioned earlier, for more than two decades, and I can tell you that even now, running into a person of color at a trade tasting or a wine class or seminar is still sadly unusual. You know, there are just too few black or brown somms or wine buyers or beverage directors, and it's just something that is a real weakness in the industry. We lose a whole different perspective. We lose a whole different approach to wine. And, you know, wine is something that's a universal property of humankind. It was discovered 10 or 12,000 years ago in a very distant part of the world. And it has been an essential element of culture for Arabs and Egyptians and Asians and Indians and blacks and Hispanics and Caucasians for all of that time. And to have an industry in the modern era that denies any of those people full unfettered access to wine and all of the joy and wonder that is wine is really not only ridiculous, it's offensive. I think one of the problems is that we focus as an industry too much on trophy wines. You know, the Montrachets or the Latours, things that are gonna cost $500 or $600 or $1,500 a bottle. You know, that's what everyone wants to talk about. That's what the wine writers write about. That's what the magazines put on their covers. And that immediately closes the door in most faces. So when your orientation is to money and rarity, you're letting out, or you're keeping out everybody else. And I really applaud what Leah is doing. It's really overdue, and we really need that diversity in the industry. Every industry needs that kind of diversity. I mean, it's just silly that we don't have it. So again, Leah, my hat's off to you and your organization. I think what you're doing is terrific.
Yeah. Jim Logren and Leah Jones. Yeah. Leah Jones is the executive director of Diversity in Wines and Spirits. Jim Logren, certified wine educator and author of a couple of books on wine, our guest today. You can join in with your own questions or comments. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234 or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller, Natalie Guyette, our producer today, Tyler Ditter, our engineer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at wines and the wine industry today with our two guests, Leah Jones, Executive Director of Diversity in Wine and Spirits. She's also a sommelier. Jim Logren, Certified Wine Educator and the author of a couple of books on wine. One is A Beer Drinker's Guide to Knowing and Enjoying Fine Wine and 50 Ways to Love Wine More. Questions for them, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm wondering what you guys think about the consumer side of this as well. Do you think wine has a reputation as being for a certain audience and just leaves others out? Leah, maybe you can start.
That's a good question. I think that when we look at consumers, I think that's a good question. Because it brings up one of the issues that I have. What are Black wine drinkers drinking, and how did they come about drinking it? And most of the time, you know, you'll see them drinking lower end wines. I don't want to say lower end. How can I articulate this better? But, you know, brands like mass produced wines. How about that?
Yeah.
There you go. You know,
your wine. Your Yellowtail. Right. Your factory wines. You know, but part of that is cost, and part of that is not really wanting to invest and spend money in something that you don't have a lot of knowledge in. You know, so I think reaching out to that demographic and educating them on wine is super important. But there are a lot of Black wine consumers that they are educated and they are willing to spend. So when you look at their behaviors, those are the people that have higher disposable income. They probably have a higher education than that of someone that this is typically, right? I don't have the actual numbers in front of me, but there's definitely trends, and there's different wine that is marketed to that demographic, just because, you know, the stereotype is that Black African American Black wine consumers have a sweet palate, and so a sweeter palate. So, you know, Moscato is marketed to them. You know, I know there was a rapper. I almost think it was Nicki Minaj, you know, that was marketing Moscato. And I'm like, can we not drink Moscato? Can we drink something else? Can we drink something else? Sorry, guys. I'm just not a Moscato fan. I'm not. What's the other one? Pink Zinfandel? Is that the sweet one?
White Zinfandel.
You know, I think certain things. It is pink, right?
It is pink.
I think
Behringer
makes it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there's a sweet one that Behringer makes.
Yeah, a number of people do. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is fine, but it's like, I think it's the education and just stop marketing sweet stuff. You know, and you know what? And I'm not going to even say that because, you know, German wines, you know, when we think about that, you know, there are other sweet wines besides Moscato. How about that? I'll say that. And Pink Zinfandel. but Jim, before Jim answers, can I just say one thing?
Yeah.
Jim, you know, I looked you up. I looked this 50 ways to love wine more. Can I buy this from you and you sign this book for me? Because I can't think of 50 more ways to love wine more.
Oh, I had to stop at 50.
I didn't want
the book to be too big. Absolutely.
Oh, man.
Jump on your question, Larry, about people who really are not wine insiders buying and drinking wine. wine definitely has an intimidation factor to it. And people are really afraid of making the wrong choice. So what they tend to do is go with the same brand over and over again. I mean, they tried whatever it may be, some factory wine, Chardonnay. They're comfortable with it. They know what it is. It doesn't challenge anything, and it doesn't scare them. So they go with it. And the marketing in the wine industry is huge. So you've got to fight the marketing as well. I would make a recommendation to people. Number one is to remember that it's just fermented grape juice. Right? So we're not dealing with fine art objects here that are worth hundreds of thousands of dollars a piece. It's fermented grape juice that is able, through chemistry, to bring great pleasure and relaxation to us. So start there. Secondly, if and when you can ever get back into a wine shop safely or well masked up, pick the brains of the person who works there. Most people who work in wine shops really know their stuff, and they're there to help you. They're trying to make customers, not scare people away. So just go in and say, hey, look, I'm used to drinking Chateau Planck Chardonnay, and I would like to expand my palate a little bit, maybe even try some different varietals. Can you give me some recommendations? So just try some things. Explore. It's only a bottle of wine, kids. You know, it's not going to break your bank. It's not going to change your life. It may if it's good, but it's not if it's bad. Just try some things. Experiment. Buy some wines you've never heard of. Look at a label and say, I don't even know what that is. And ask the person selling it, what is this about? Give it a shot. So don't be intimidated by wine or by the wine community. You know, people who tell you you must drink this, or, you know, if you're not drinking it this way, you're not drinking it right, or, my God, sweet wine, what an abomination. You know, you hear that stuff all the time. The reality is that this is all fad-driven. Before 1960, something like 75 to 80% of all the wine produced in the United States was sweet. And you can say that about many countries. Before 1990, probably three-quarters of the wine produced in South Africa, which is a great wine-producing country, was all sweet. The ancients drank and loved sweet wines. And in those days, it was because fermentations often didn't stick, and they didn't really know the science of winemaking like we do now. So it was very common to have a few degrees of what we call in the business residual sugar left in the wine. And so wines were sweet. Many of the storied wines of ancient writings were sweet wine. So just because the wine community has decided that sweet wines are out of vogue doesn't mean that they're not good or that you shouldn't enjoy them if that's what turns you on. Yeah. So trust your own palate. You know, you're the only one who's tasting it. So if you like it, that's a good thing. If you don't like it, don't do it again.
Don't do it again. Chuck in Plainfield, Wisconsin has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Chuck.
Hi. Say, 40 years ago, I worked for a liquor wholesaler. And I can't mention any names here, but we sold everything from Chateau de Chem to, say, T.J. Swan Mellow Days, and I'll let you guess what was sold where. And there was a number of pretty racist marketing and merchandising practices that were very prevalent. For instance, they would heavily market the pop wines. You know, everything was like a fad, like you just got them saying, but they would sell those in the central city, in the urban, in the black neighborhoods, and the other, like Lambrusco, they would sell to the discos and everything, but they would send black salesmen into the African-American neighborhoods, and then they would send other people, and, you know, I'm just wondering, has this changed? Do they still heavily promote certain sizes and brands and everything in the different ethnic neighborhoods, or has that changed a little bit?
All right. Well, let's see. Leah, go ahead.
Well, again, this goes back to what I was saying about Moscato. You know, you see that so much. It is prevalent in AKA the hood. I grew up in Harlem, New York City, so it's changed over time. But when you go to the liquor store, you'll see Moscato. And I'm like, well, what about a Tokaj or a Sauternes or, you know, a Vouvray? You know, why can't we, if you're going to, and again, I agree with you, Jim, piggybacking on what you said about the sweet wine, that's fine. But why does it have to be that and Lambrusco? There's other wines that, like you said, that you can have to expand your palate. So, I mean, that's just, that's what I've seen recently when I've gone to my local wine and spirit shop. And then there's things that you will not see. I would have to go all the way downtown, for a chartreuse, for example. You know, you're not going to find that, like, up north, in Harlem, New York City. You're just not going to find that. As far as I know, that's still something that goes on. Jim?
Yeah, Jim?
I would agree. I think that perhaps the marketing is less overt than it used to be, but it doesn't change the fact that it's reinforcing a systemic problem. Let's send all the cheap, sweet stuff to the hood because the cheap, sweet drinkers are there, instead of let's mix it up and send some really good stuff down as well. You'll see an example of this. I lived until very recently in Chicago, and I'll point this out. Whole Foods Market, which we used to call Whole Paycheck, decided to open a store in the hood. And I mean in the hood, on the south side of Chicago, in a very tough neighborhood. And people really kind of thought they were crazy to attempt this. But their approach was that, look, it doesn't matter what color you are, you need good food and you appreciate good food. And so maybe we'll have a slightly different offering in the Whole Foods Market that's in Englewood than the one that's in North Chicago. But we're still going to do it, and we'll try to put some things at a slightly lower price point, but we're basically going to prove the concept. And they did open a store, and you know what? It's very successful because people everywhere want to be given the opportunity to try and enjoy. Now, maybe they'll find they can't afford it as often. So maybe if you're selling wine in the hood, people aren't going to buy that $20 bottle three times a week like they will in another neighborhood, but they might buy it once a week. Or maybe they're not going to go to wine classes, three times a week, but they'd be happy to attend a half-hour seminar somewhere and learn a little bit more than they know now. So you've got to give people an opportunity. We've got to stop using economics as a barrier to entry, and stop producing, like you've used Moscato. You know, a good Moscato from Italy is a pretty nice wine. The problem is that once these big winery companies, these factory wineries, understood that there was a market for sweet drink in the hood, then they started cranking out what I call essentially cheap imitations of good Moscato. And because they could do it inexpensively and they could, they could realize a great profit on each bottle. So I don't know that the advertising is quite as in your face as our caller said it was 40 years ago, but the underlying conditions still exist and still need to be addressed.
Yeah. Well, let's go to Ryan in Douglas County next. Ryan, what's on your mind?
Hi, yes. I find this discussion to be very interesting and try to bring sort of like racial equity to the consumption of wine. But, I would like to, if I could take a second to just pull back from this for a moment and say, in this current day and era in which we are having, like, you know, African Americans dying at the hands of police and dying at the hands of the coronavirus in a much larger number than was white Americans. It's like, it feels kind of like that this kind of conversation to have right now just is not going to cut it. Like, maybe we should be dealing with something that's a lot more serious, because we are in a lot more serious time to be dealing with this. It seems like something, the discussion about, like, racial equity and wines is sort of like something that we would do at the end of our giant Herculean challenge to bring, you know, equality and egalitarianism to our society. Not something that we should do right now in the midst of this pandemic, in the midst of, like, the in the midst of riots, in the midst of police violence, like, and mass incarceration. It's just, it just seems like it's not going to, it's, this is not going to really make any difference in their lives.
Well, I thank you very much for calling. And Leah, let me go to you for a response.
I like to say that I started my nonprofit 2 years ago, and funding, I've basically funded it myself. We've had no donations. We've had sponsorship here and there. It's been very difficult. I've been Black all my life, and so I've been discriminated against. I've faced racial, adversity in regards to being in the hospitality industry for, again, we're over 20 years now. I produced the first all-Black wine professional panel for a major wine conference last week online, and that has never happened. There was a moment where I gave a moment of silence, because right now what is happening in the wine industry, Black people are now getting the visibility that they were meant to have years ago. We're talking about people's livelihoods. Why this conference, why this webinar was important, and why it is definitely relevant to what's going on today, is that we have industries that have been ignoring racism in their prospective industries for years. And the only reason I was able to put on that seminar is because a Black man died. We watched 8 minutes and 46 seconds. Other than that, we've barely had any visibility. After that webinar, I had a plethora of wineries, major institutions, CEOs from literally all over the world. I had a call with New Zealand the other day because of that seminar, because I was able to, for the first time, show the industry what it's like to be Black in our industry, what we've had to deal with, what we've had to face. It's definitely relevant because we're talking about people's jobs. One of the first jobs to go in a restaurant was a sommelier job. The restaurant industry will not be the same post-COVID-19. Some of those sommeliers were Black. For you to be a Black somm is something that's, it's just a rare thing to happen. And so now, what are you going to do? It was hard enough just because you were Black. What are you going to do now, post-COVID-19? These were issues. This is a discussion that we had on that webinar. And it's a two-part series. The second part is on Friday, where I now have allies, CEOs of major companies, responding to the previous webinar to say, hey, you know, we need to do better as a community. You know, we're literally talking about people's livelihoods, Black livelihoods. I think that's extremely important. It's just the industry's completely taken, you know, it's just taken a different turn. I've literally been in several publications recently just to talk about this in the wine industry. People are listening and people want to talk. This is a conversation that definitely needs to be had more than ever. Yeah. It's unfortunate that this is a conversation based on what's going on, but for the first time in the last 2 years, people see me now as they didn't before.
Yeah. Well put. I want to give Reggie in Oshkosh a chance to join in with something that relates to this as well. Reggie, hi.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for having me on. Real quickly, I just wanted to say that, you know, grandparents immigrated from Italy, so wine was a big part of our family. And what Leah's doing to get, you know, diversity into the wine culture is overdue. And just because, you know, some white people are just figuring out that there's inequity places, you know, it doesn't mean that we all haven't seen it for decades or even longer, depending on, you know, how long your family's been in this country. And, you know, I really applaud you. And I think the fight needs to happen on every front, not just on a couple that are in the news.
So it's a piece of the puzzle, in other words. Jim, maybe you could comment. Yeah.
Well, yes. And you know, referring back to Ryan's call, and Reggie, thank you for your sentiments as well. I understand what Ryan is saying, that it sounds trite almost. We do have some terrible things going on. But the point, I think, from another perspective, is that anything that can improve the situation is probably something worth doing. All right, we can't all talk about, or we can't all have direct effect and impact on certain aspects of culture, but we can have an impact on that aspect of culture that we are involved in. So if we could get more factory owners to talk about creating jobs for minorities and people of color, if we could get more people of every stripe in our culture to talk about opening their arms and being more inclusive to people of color, if we could talk, as Leah points out so importantly, this is about economics. And economics underlie everything. You're going to have white police officers kneeling on necks as long as they feel that they're an upper class and they're kneeling on a lower class. And one of the keys to reversing that is to give that lower class more economic power and strength in this society. So if we can do that, if through this conversation some restaurateur will decide the next hire of a somm or a beverage director is going to be a black instead of a white, if we can get some consumers to decide that they're going to order and try some wines made by black winemakers instead of only by white winemakers, I think we've taken one small step in the right direction. And it's very hard to solve all the big problems all at once. But if we can move the bar a little bit in the right direction, then I think it's time well spent.
Yeah. Leah, your business is, you're the executive director of Diversity in Wine and Spirits. And how do people support you or go to learn more about your organization online?
Yes, our website is diversityinwineandspirits.org. There's some information there. We have a contact form if you'd like to contact us directly. We're also launching a website called dwshpledge.com, where we're asking people in the hospitality, wine, spirits industries to take a pledge, a commitment towards diversity. And you can also put in your information so that we can email you some more information about what that website is going to look like in the upcoming weeks.
Well, it has been a real... Yeah.
Oh, sorry. We're on Facebook.
Oh, no, go ahead, Leah.
Instagram, too.
Oh, okay,
so, yeah,
go ahead.
We're on Facebook, on Instagram, too.
Okay. So, if we go to Diversity in Wine and Spirits, we're going to find it.
Yeah.
For sure. Okay. Well, it's been a real pleasure to talk with both of you, Leah and Jim. I want to thank you so much. I hope we have a chance to do this again. Appreciate all that you both are doing. And again, I hope we have a chance to do this again. Thank you both so much.
Thank you, Larry. It's been a pleasure, and I appreciate the opportunity. And And I really want to thank you for letting me meet Leah, which has been great. So
I'm waiting for that book, Jim.
Okay. Send me the address. All right.
Leah Jones is the Executive Director of Diversity in Wine and Spirits. Jim Loughran is a certified wine educator and the author of a couple of books on wine. One is called A Beer Drinker's Guide to Knowing and Enjoying Fine Wine, and the other is 50 Ways to Love Wine More. I certainly enjoyed talking with them, and I bet you did as well. It was kind of an eye-opening experience to look into this a bit more. Well, we're going to switch gears for you coming up next, and we're going to talk about some of the benefits of working with your hands, from feelings of accomplishment to providing a sense of calm even. How about that? That's kind of nice to think about in these times. That next on the Ideas Network, we're going to be talking with two skilled blacksmiths. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.